It is a joy to be together this morning. Look forward to the next few minutes that we share together. We've been doing a series of lessons called Grace for All. And I just want to declare once again in our hearing to remind us of what we already know. For those of you that may not know this, this may be great insight into what it means to be a Christian. A Christian is not a good person. A Christian is a person that has been imparted goodness from the Lord God Almighty. Amen. Christ. And so we do not present ourselves as perfect people, but we do present ourselves before God asking for His perfection to be at work in our life. Thus, welcome to grace, where God takes Jesus' perfection, which we were not, nor could we ever be perfect. Jesus was without sin. He took our sin and its just punishment, and He placed it on the sinless Son, Jesus Christ. And God took His perfection and sinlessness and placed it upon us that we could be sons and daughters of God. And thus we have been recipients of the greatest gift of all, the gift of grace. Grace is not just a feminine word, as though feminine is something that's bad. God created femininity. But I believe many guys, like myself, may have images in our mind when we think of grace that it's something that's soft. When you see grace, what you see is the cross of Jesus and the worst of humanity upon Him. And His willingness to give His life for us. Friends, that's what grace is. It's an incredible gift of God. Thus, it changes our lives. I want to tell you this morning a story. It's one of my favorites of all time. I stole it. I'm going to share it with you today. So I'm actually not stealing and plagiarizing. I'll give credit where credit is due. Zig Ziglar tells this story. He's told it many years ago, and it's absolutely one of my favorites. He tells the story of a guy that he names Mr. B. Mr. B is a very successful CEO executive. Mr. B had been to several seminars and conferences on becoming a better business leader, and he was excited. He wanted to do something about it, so he pulled everybody together in his corporation and gave them one of those great pep talks. I'm going to tell you what, we're going to change things around here, and it's going to begin with me. I'm going to change how I lead this company, and I hope that you'll join right in with me. I'm going to get here early, and I'm going to stay late. I'm going to have a short lunch. I'm going to be excited, and I'm going to I'm going to encourage you, and I want you to encourage each other. We're going to do this. We're going to build a great company together. We're going to be so successful. And he gave all the hoorah, hoorah, hoorah. Well, he did that for maybe a couple of weeks, and about 2 weeks later, he was at the country club with some of his crony buddies, and they're having a little meal at lunch, and Mr. B looks down at his watch, and he sees that he is late to get back to work. He's got a meeting at 1 o'clock. He's got 4 minutes, 4 minutes to 1 to get there, so he just gets up from the table in a rush, and he gets over to his car, and he puts that car in reverse, and he peels rubber, and then he gets out on the freeway, and as he's going down on the freeway, he looks in his rearview mirror, and he sees those flashing lights. Mr. B is upset. He does not have time for a policeman to pull him over, but he pulls over to the side of the road, and sure enough, the policeman comes over there and asks Mr. B, "Sir, what's the hurry?" He tells him, "I'm late. I've got to get back to my business, and I've got to get with my people. Can we hurry this up?" And the officer said, "Well, can I see your driver's license, your registration, your proof of insurance?" And so Mr. B gives him all those papers, and the cop just kind of saunters back to his vehicle and gets in. Mr. B's just sitting there. He is getting madder by the minute. He's getting angrier and angrier. Why can't these cops get out there and catch the real criminals? You know, those robbers and rapists and people that steal. Here he is picking on us taxpaying citizens. Does he not know who pays his salary? I can't believe I'm being subjected to this. The policeman comes back and hands him all of his paperwork along with one more piece of paper. It's a ticket. Mr. B steamed down. Boy, he drives onto the office and he gets to the office and he's walking in there and he's feeling a little bit embarrassed because he's late and not living up to the example that he said it was going to be. And you know what happens when things like that happen to us? Very often what we do is we try to blame shift. Put the focus on someone else. Just so happened that someone else was his top salesman. Top salesman says to Mr. B, "Mr. B, good afternoon." Mr. B says to that top salesman, "Nothing good about it. By the way, do you have a minute to come join me in my office?" And Mr. Salesman goes into Mr. B's office, and Mr. B asks the salesman, "Tell me about that Armstrong account. Seems like this Armstrong account's been taking forever to close. What is the status? Tell me of it right now." The salesman, who'd been there 16 years and brought so much business to make that company a great, successful company, said, "Sir, Mr. B, I'm sorry to tell you about the Armstrong account. We're just not able to do it. I did everything in my power that I possibly could to bring this business to us." And Mr. B says, "Do what? You mean you've lost the Armstrong account? What in the world are we going to do with you? Just because you've worked here 16 years doesn't mean that you're going to work for this company for eternity. I tell you what, if you don't go out and get some business and bring it to us, you're going to be looking for business with some other company because you're not going to work here." And folks, if you thought Mr. B was mad, you should have seen that salesman when he walked into his secretary's office and he saw that secretary. And he said to his secretary, "Miss," he said, tell me where we stand on that Hilliard account. I've been waiting for weeks to hear from Mr. Hilliard. Tell me about what's going on." She said, "Sir, I haven't done much with the Hilliard account. You told me to be working on these three other accounts and give them priority." "Well, I'm telling you, don't do it today. You ought to be able to do this. Anybody can do this. And if you can do this, we're going to find somebody that can." That secretary thought, "That's sorry, dog. Does he not know how much I've done for this company? How good I've made him look over the years? While those sales accounts that he got, does he not know that I'm the one that did the majority of the work for those? And I know stuff on him. That sorry dog, if he ever pulls a stunt on me, I'll let the blabber start blabbing. Who does he think he is?" And then the salesman had told his secretary to go mail some letters while she was on top of doing everything else. And so she's mad. She's mad. If you thought that salesman was mad, you should have seen that secretary when she walked down to where the receptionist was. Well, that receptionist, she doesn't do nothing. She just answers phones and connects people all up. She doesn't have hardly anything to do. So she asked her, "Ma'am, can you go take this down to the mailroom? I've got to get these letters out today. You don't do nothing. You just sit here and answer the phone. I know it's not your job, but I think you can do it. I've got too much to do. If you want this company to succeed, you need to go do it." Well, that receptionist goes, "Oh my goodness, I am the glue that holds this company together. Nothing would get done. Nothing. Not a single thing would get done unless I do every single day. They all go back to the break room and talk. I'm stuck out here at the desk all day long. Who do they think they are?" And you thought that secretary was mad. You should have seen that receptionist when she went home. She was so mad. She walks in the house and there's her 12-year-old son sitting in front of the TV on the floor. He's got a big rip in the seat of his britches. She says, "Son, didn't I tell you that your mom worked so hard? I told you when you get home and you're going to go play, you need to go change into some play clothes. I work hard for this money. We're barely making ends meet. Who do you think you are? Just wearing your best clothes and going to play, and I can't believe you did this." Well, the little boy thought, "My goodness. This could happen to anybody. I can't believe my mother is sitting there screaming at me. I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident. It could have happened to anybody." The little boy went up to his room. The mother told him to go to his room, and he wasn't going to get supper that night. He was mad. You thought the receptionist mad? You should have seen that 12-year-old boy when that cat walked in front of him. And he hauled off, and he kicked the cat. Said, "You've probably been up to no good today anyway." Slams the door. Now, friends, let me ask you a real simple question. Ziggs asked the question. Wouldn't it have been better if Mr. B had driven straight from the country club to the home of the receptionist and kicked that cat? It would have saved a lot of heartache that day. And maybe the more important question for us to think about for just a few minutes is, whose cat are you kicking? I think that's a great question. Whose cat are you kicking? I want to share with you a phrase that has been meaningful to me, and I want to pass it on to you, and that is this: hurt people hurt people. Did you hear me? Let me say that again. Hurt people hurt people. We have a tendency that when we feel pain, I don't know what it is about us, we feel the need to pass on pain to others. The best sermon that has ever been preached, it was never preached by me, it's never preached by anybody I've ever heard. It was a sermon that I read in the New Testament. It's the Sermon on the Mount. And what Jesus is teaching us basically with the Sermon on the Mount is not to pass on our pain. To not pass on our pain. Blessed are you when people insult you. The last time I was insulted, I did not go, whoop, I didn't realize I was so blessed. He said, when people persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me, Jesus says, rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. Jesus would say in that sermon, don't be angry with your brother. Settle matters quickly, he would teach. You don't look at a woman lustfully, because when you do, you're just as guilty as one who literally committed adultery. Jesus would say, if someone forces you to go 1 mile with him, go with him 2 miles. And he even teaches, love your enemies. Do you understand what Jesus is teaching in the Sermon on the Mount? The main thing he is teaching is stop the pain from being transmitted from one person to the next. Y'all seen radio transmitters, haven't you? You know, radio transmitter will receive input, it'll receive data in the sound of form or in the sound of picture, and it makes this little transition into sine waves, and then it's transmitted. These sine waves are broadcast by a radio tower, and the more powerful the tower, the larger the area that the signal can be picked up. To receive a radio transmission, you've got to have an antenna, right? And this antenna, you young people, y'all know what a radio is, right? Do they still have radios? We know iPods and all that kind of stuff. But maybe when you're driving down the road, I don't know what it is, but I've got a young person in my life that has discovered music and she thinks it's wonderful. But she can't stay with one song the full length of the song. It's like driving me crazy. If anybody can help me with that, I would be grateful for that. I don't understand. She actually likes the song, but we've got to change it before the song's ended. I don't get it. But somewhere it makes sense. All right, moving on. Here's the great thing about a radio is it has a tuner. And you can tune in what station you want to receive. You and I are like radio towers. We're like antennas. And we get to decide what transmissions we want to pay attention to in our lives. What happens is that when we are transmitted, or when pain is transmitted to us, when other people's sinfulness and anger is transmitted to us, we've got to decide, do we tune in or do we tune in to something else? What I'm suggesting today is we learn to tune in to God's grace. Otherwise, we find ourselves in a cycle of anger and revenge. I've literally been thinking about this stuff all week long. And I'll tell you how good I am. I'm so good that I got on Highway 59 headed south the other day. And I've got a semi-truck beside me, and I'm trying to get around this semi-truck on the left-hand side. And there's a car in front of me, and I can only go as fast as the car that's in front of me. And I'm really needing to get the kids on to school. Okay, now I've got 3 witnesses watching Dad's behavior. And this little punk in a Nissan, I'll save it because it might have been one of you. He comes flying up behind me and begins to like act like it's my fault that I'm keeping him from getting on down the road. And I'm thinking, does he not see that I have someone in front of him? So, bro, it's on. Like, don't come. All right. So now I'm getting all torqued up and ramped up, and I can't believe this cat behind me is acting like this. Doesn't he know I'm a preacher? He needs to leave me alone. And I finally got by the truck, and he comes up beside me, and then he gets behind the car that was in front of me, and you know what I did? I pulled up right beside him.
Oh, yeah, baby, I got it going on now.
And the car in him goes faster and faster, he goes faster and faster, and I go faster and faster. I got him locked in. I'm just as happy as I can be. Until I look down and realize that I'm going 90 miles an hour. I was pumped with adrenaline. And I looked at that speedometer, and then I was like, are you an idiot? And the answer to that question is yes. Yes. What am I doing? I am not representing Jesus here. So I put on the Jesus brake. Right? Did I not say we're all a work in progress? And obviously I am in constant need of repair and grace from God. What do we do when people treat us with anger? Friends, when you think about it, I believe anger comes from our desire to control all aspects of our life. And when others mess with our control, command and control center, we get really, really angry. But do you realize how little control you have over the major events of your life and my life? Did any of you get to choose your parents? Did any of you get to decide where and when you were born? Did y'all get to decide how much money your mom and dad had or didn't have? Did you get to decide what genetic attributes that you would have that would be passed down from those before you? How many of you got to decide what early childhood sicknesses and pain that you would get? Who of you got to choose what school you would go to? Who chose whether, when you went to school, whether people would make fun of you or support you? Or irritate you, or respect you, or humiliate you? Did you get to decide all of those things? Friends, do you realize that there's very little in life that you and I can control? So why all the anger? The Bible says in Psalm 56:11, in God I trust, I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? It seems to me that hurt people hurt people. But people that tune into the grace of God seem to emit the grace of God. It's obviously not a sin on your part when someone hurts you, but if you don't handle the hurt properly, the sin becomes a catalyst for your own. I love what this guy named Richard Rohr said. If you do not transform your pain, you will surely transmit it. And folks, I think that's so true. You know, in Matthew chapter 18, verse 21, there's this parable of this unmerciful servant. And the unmerciful servant had this exorbitant debt that he had created. He wasn't just a mere underling slave. This man must have been in charge of an enormous amount of money and assets on behalf of the king. And he mismanaged it. And he ended up owing the king 10,000 talents of silver. Now, folks, that was 10,000 in this day was the highest number anyone could have. No one had admitted a million or a bit or a trillion or a billion or a trillion. Our government has now helped us identify what $1 trillion is, and we happen to have 17 trillion in debt. We've created this enormous number for us. But the highest number that they had was 10,000. So we owned 10,000 talents. In other words, this amount of money was so much. There is, like, King Herod, when he taxed all of his subjects, like Syria and Damascus and all of these areas, Herod the Great, his tax revenue was 900 talents, not 10,000 talents. If it helps you have a perspective of how much money this guy actually owed. And the guy comes before, the king has him come before him, and he's there, and he's begging for mercy from the king, because the king is going to put him and his wife and his children in servitude and in jail until the debt is paid. The debt can't be paid. Impossible. Not going to happen. He'll die in prison. The man does the only thing he can do, and he gets down on his knees, and he begs for mercy. And wouldn't you know this king that Jesus talks about forgives the impossible debt. And he absorbs the debt himself. Well, I'm really glad that servant then, for the rest of his life, transmitted the grace of God as grace had been given to him, right? Oh, no. There was this other guy that owed him about 100 days' wages. I mean, it's a payable amount. It's a large amount, but it's a payable amount. And he says, where's my money? Give it to me now. If you don't give it to me now, I'm bringing the law after you. And the people that knew of this man's debt being forgiven couldn't believe it. They went and told the king, and the king threw the man in jail. Rather than receiving God's grace and transmitting God's grace, he chose to transmit the pain of his life. He would never be shamed again. He wanted to settle his debts. You and I get a choice every day of our life, much like Victoria Rivola did. Victoria knows a lot about pain, physical pain, and emotional pain. She was the victim of a mindless act of stupidity that to this day still impacts her life every time she looks into a mirror. It was November 2004. This 44-year-old woman at the time was driving home from Long Island. She had been to her niece's house, or her niece's school to see a recital, a performance. And she was looking forward to getting home after that recital, relaxing that evening. She doesn't remember what happened. She doesn't remember the silver Nissan that was coming toward her. She doesn't remember the 18-year-old that was outside the window of the silver Nissan holding a 20-pound frozen turkey that he let go of when they met. That 20-pound turkey went through her windshield, bent her steering wheel, and hit her face. And the bones in her face shattered like a plate hitting a tile floor. She doesn't remember all the days in ICU that she experienced where she was just barely hanging on to life. But she does remember the day that she went to court. And she does remember the day in which the judge brought this young man, Ryan Cushing. Do y'all remember the story? His name was Ryan Cushing. Ryan represented all the bad that this young generation had going on. And it's about time that the law steps in and teaches them the consequences of their behavior and teaches them something about life and make an example with him so other people would know that you can't do such foolishness. And the judge has Ryan come in, and Ryan's trembling. He's tearful, and he's very apologetic on the day the verdict was given. Well, the judge gave the verdict. Ryan would only spend 6 months behind bars, 5 years probation, some counseling, and public service. And the sentence enraged everybody, and the courtroom then erupted. They could not believe Ryan had gotten off so easy. And everyone was objecting except Victoria. The reduced sentence was her idea. The boy walked over and embraced her. And in full view of the judge and the crowd, she held him tight and she stroked his hair. He just sobbed, and Victoria said this, "I forgive you. I want your life to be the best that it can be." Victoria was given a second chance at life, and she believes in giving second chances to other people as well. She would later say about her anger and the impulse to strike back. She said, quote, "If I hadn't let go of that anger, I'd be consumed by this need for revenge. Forgiving him helps me move on." Now she volunteers at this probation department. She said, "I'm trying to help others, but I know the rest of my life I'm going to be known as the turkey lady." That's what everybody refers to as, the turkey lady. But then she said, "You know, it could have been worse. It could have thrown a ham, and then I'd be Miss Piggy forever." Victoria knows her. Victoria knows grace. She chooses to transmit grace. What will you and I tune into? grace, or pain. Because whichever one we tune into is that which we will transmit. If we can serve any of you, we ask you to come forward while we stand and sing.